My name is Daniel Serwer. I'm Vice President for Peace and Stability Operations here at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and it's an enormous pleasure to welcome today Vice President Tariq al-Hashimi from Iraq. This is, as you all know, a very sensitive moment in Washington so far as Iraq issues are concerned. The Institute has been pleased recently to have been the convener and coordinator of support for the Iraq Study Group. You're familiar with the Iraq Study Group's results. The administration is clearly taking some time to think about that advice, as well as a lot of other advice that it's getting. And we look forward in early in the new year at this point to an announcement from the president. So this is a particularly good moment to be thinking hard about Iraq and hard about the options, not just for the United States, but also for Iraqis. Iraqis sometimes criticize the Iraq Study Group report, saying it's more about America's problem in Iraq than about Iraq's problem in Iraq, and they're correct about that. It is more about America's problem in Iraq than about Iraq's problems. And that's what it was intended to be. We're particularly pleased to have you here today. We had the pleasure of Sayed Abdulaziz Al-Hakim last week, and we're very pleased to have you, and we will welcome, I hope, in the future many more Iraqi leaders as your country and our country seeks to work its way through very difficult problems. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your speech. I also feel very grateful for this opportunity to be in here in this institute, which is well known also in Iraq, and we are also very much capitalized on this opportunity to have an open dialogue with you, and hopefully that this dialogue is not only concentrated on the Iraq and on the American problems in Iraq. As I said, in fact, it will be very interesting, in fact, to see your views about how the Iraqis could resolve their own problems. I'm going to deliver a short speech, and afterwards I'll welcome your queries and questions. And hopefully within the time limit that's been left to us, we will end up to a fruitful and constructive dialogue and conclusions for that dialogue. So thank you very much for this opportunity, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to address you today, not only as an Iraqi vice president, as a concerned Iraq looking for peace and security. For his fellow countrymen, I begin my statement today with a quote from a very famous document crafted by an American statement. All men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among them, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government. With that said, I address you today in the spirit of Thomas Jefferson. The spirit of inalienable rights this country has accepted as its foundation, and that we strive to guarantee our people and use to hold our government to account. Like the founding father of your great nation, we also have similar aspiration to be free and enjoy liberties, of being secure in our homes and in the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, we have a long way to go. in Iraq before we can enjoy such luxuries. Even today, hundreds of people are dying as a result of senseless violence in Iraq, which I unchecked will lead to disastrous civil conflict and possible breakup of my country. We hear horrific stories of militias setting people on fire and burning them alive, and other of militias kidnapping people and then torturing them to death by using an electric drill, leaving their bodies full of holes. Car bombs go off everywhere, killing innocent people. Everybody, hundreds of people die senselessly. How did this country get transformed into this ugly tragedy and nightmare? To truly appreciate what Iraqis are facing today in their country, security-wise, I ask that every leader try to imagine this scenario. Imagine one day waking up and finding out that your nation's leaders have completely dismantled all police and military. As a result, there is not one policeman or state or federal law enforcement agent, or even one nation guard or army soldier to protect you from criminal elements or terrorism or terrorists or anyone else. It will be total chaos. That's what has happened in Iraq in 2003. Then imagine that instead of calling back the army and security forces, the authorities in this imaginary scenario decided to form a new army and police from members of the KKK. Some racist, supremacist militia, some mercenaries and organized crime gangs. Then, with the new government issued budget and government issued vehicles, these armed groups begin arresting, torturing, murdering innocent people, either because of their faith or creed or purely for profit. Yet, this is exactly what has happened in Iraq. In 2003, a new Iraqi army and security forces was formed by enlisting members of sectarian, supremacist militias and foreign mercenaries who have deadly agenda against members of other faiths. As a result, these militia death squads operating from the Interior Ministry and other government agencies have been going around arresting, kidnapping, brutally torturing, and then executing thousands of innocent victims solely because they are members of another faith or purely for a profit. These roaming bandits of supremacists acting under the color of law and in addition to the regular criminal elements that are free to kill and steal for profit. Add all that to the foreign fighters, terrorists and foreign intelligence operatives of other countries who have an agenda in seeing Iraq remain unstable. These major mistakes have been addressed and corrected before we can address the terrible living conditions of Iraq, of Iraqis, such as the shortage in electricity, gasoline and other basic services. If we really want true democracy to take hold and succeed in Iraq today, these are some suggestions on how to make Iraq a success story for democracy. One, reform the army and security forces. One solution to correct militia affiliated, infiltrated, and extremely sectarian military and security forces is to call back units from the pre-2003 Iraqi army. The ex-army was based on conscription and adequately represented all communities, Shia, Sunni, Christian, Muslims, and others. The soldiers are low-rank officers, can easily be given refresher or oriented courses and to be integrated into the new army, thereby watering down the militia elements. These units can be replaced the security forces. In this manner, the heavily squad sectarian military and police will be replaced by all professional services representing all communities in Iraq and strengthening the bonds of unity in the nation. These new national Iraqi forces can then address the many challenges to the Iraqi people, the militia, the sectarian death squads, Al-Qaeda, and other terrorist groups and organized crime networks. Two, disbanding militias. All militias are paramilitaries, not under the direct control of the government, should be disbanded. These sectarian supremacist militia, who have been behind much of the killing and attack against mosques and religious leaders, cannot be allowed to integrate into the Iraqi government-run military, whether army, national guard, or whatever other government security forces belong to Ministry of Interior. Past experience has shown that this would be a recipe for a disaster. The militia units would still act separately as a sectarian force within Iraqi military, tainting their repetition and their effectiveness to protect the innocent people. The entire military will be seen as an enemy of the people. The militia must be treated the same as Al-Qaeda and must be confronted in the same way, which is not the case. Solving the insurgency, many of the groups making up the Iraqi resistance want a negotiated settlement and enter into the political process. There must be a comprehensive plan, achieve a ceasefire, and bring them into a peaceful civil society. Economic incentives can be coupled with a political settlement. Most are not fighting for ideological goals, rather simply to end the foreign occupation. A special working group can be set up to address the various issues with these armed groups. This working group would be made of four major parties: the U.S. government, which can be discussed the future of their presence in Iraq; the Iraqi government, which can develop the National Reconciliation Initiative; some incentives from the Gulf nations and Jordan, which can assist financially and politically; and the Iraqi Tawafuq Front, which can help facilitate this process and make overtures to the insurgents to behalf of the group. In addition, the multinational forces need to stop targeting whole neighborhood of inhabitants based simply on unconfirmed reports of fighters in the area. This policy of mass punishment service only to alienate the local population. Four, balance in the government. In order for Iraqi government to work as one effective and cohesive unit, all parties need to work together and share in decision-making process together as agreed prior to forming the government. Unfortunately, decisions are made unilaterally without the consultation of the main coalition members. This is the current situation in Iraq, it's quite unfortunately. The Prime Minister needs to consult and coordinate with the Presidency Council before making major military or security decisions. Sectarianism in the ministries. During the previous Ja'fari administration, many ministries underwent wholesale sectarian cleansing, in which not only the entire top leaders of ministries were placed with known Sunnis, including much of the middle management. For instance, in the health ministry, hundreds of new doctors were hired based purely on the sectarian measurement. Not one Sunni was included in these hirings. In fact, many Sunnis employed were fired and replaced by other faith and other sectors. Other ministries have similar stories, most notable the Interior Ministry, but many others as well. In addition, everybody, we receive horror stories of family members who go to health ministry, controlled Baghdad morgue, to pick up the dead bodies of their loved ones and are then arrested and killed simply because they are from other sector. Many health ministry administration hospitals refuse to treat the sick and injured if they have a different sector or different faith or different names like Umar and others. To avoid these problems caused by the imbalance of sectarian officials in the Jaafari administration, there is a proposal to set up a special committee to monitor high appointment department heads and directors. This committee would be derived and represent all major groups, sects and ethnic groups having at least 3 or 4 members. Its job is to approve these appointments, including all appointments made since the beginning of the Jaafar administration. In addition, all ministries should have 1 or 2 deputies to oversee the minister's management of the ministry. For instance, if the minister is a Shia, then the deputy should be a Sunni. If he is Kurds, then the deputy should be an Arab, and so on. The minister should have the approval of the deputy of approve hiring, firing, and budget-related decisions. This would force the minister to work together with other rather than run the ministry like fiefdom. Perpetrators of massacres. Many people who are arrested or kidnapped are then tortured to death or tortured and summarily executed. There must be a process of pursuing perpetrators of these crimes, especially murders, whether they are criminal gangs, militias, or wear police uniforms. People who commit these crimes must be arrested and brought to justice. In order for the average civilianity to respect the law and the government agencies and not to take the law into their hands, there must be an effective justice system. Murderers should not be able to act with impunity. Already 5,000 people have been dismissed from Ministry of Interior security forces because of their past criminal record. This is just a result of comprehensive reform applied on Ministry of Interior security forces so far. And the list could be increased in the future as well. This is just an indication of the infiltration done by the criminals and militia inside the security units of Ministry of Interior. Withdrawal of the U.S. military forces. I think this is the key issue for the Americans. Although most Iraqis want the withdrawal of United States forces from their country at some point in time, they differ on how and when they should leave. The United States administration clearly has to plan for an organized, or say it, timetable withdrawal, and yet has to be flexible enough to accommodate changes on the ground. A timetable can only be linked to serious efforts to reform the Iraqi military and security forces. And security law and order in the country. At the present situation, if the United States pull out the militia and militia infiltrated government forces will escalate their massacres of innocent people. There will be a security vacuum that we worried about. This will not lead to stability, but further chaos and violence that doesn't serve Iraqis as well as the American repetition. The United States has duty to reform the Iraqi government forces because it was the United States which mistakenly dissolved the previous Iraqi military and security forces. So there was more or less an obligation in that. And created this security void now being filled with supremacist sectarian militias, terrorists, and organized crime gangs. The other subject that we are facing at the present time, in fact, and behind this across the board chaos in my country is the influence of other countries in Iraqi internal issues. Those countries, in fact, trying to make things very, very difficult to the Iraqis to build their new Iraq. At the same time, they are making difficult to the United States military forces as well. And what happened time being, in fact, could be easily attributed by the harsh and direct influence in the Iraqi internal issues. And I think you are fully aware about who actually behind this interference and the names of the country that they are so far interested, in fact, to make things very, very difficult to the Iraqis. In conclusion, the ongoing violence and the chaos in Iraq will always be a major obstacle to the economic recovery of the country. The shortage of electricity, gasoline, drinking water, proper sewage treatment will continue to play second to the most important issue plaguing Iraqis, lack of legitimate and stable law and order in the country. As the violence increase in Iraq and the chaotic nature of roaming bands of murderers, kidnappers, thieves and other armed groups kill and terrorize the populace, Iraq in sliding further down the slippery road to lawlessness and gangland-like turf wars. If the root causes of this security void, violence and chaos are not raised and solved, this lawlessness and gangs war will eventually evolve into an all-out civil war, leading to the division of the country into enclaves of mini-states like Somalia today. We will have at least two extremist anti-American mini-states in Iraq, one aligned with Iran in the south and another like Taliban in the center. Both mini-states will cause chaos and havoc in the neighboring states. Instead of spreading democracy and experience and experiment in Iraq would have spread violence, extremists throughout the region. And this is the ultimate danger. If we do not act to solve the root cause, the entire democratic experiment in Iraq would be in danger of utter failure. All the thousands of lives of Iraqis and Americans who died and the hundreds of billions of dollars spent will have been for the detriment of both nations and the world. Success still achievable. It is not too late. And thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. If you will stay there, Mr. Vice President, because the cameras like you there.
At your disposal.
As you answer questions, and I'll have to recognize people okay. from here. I have microphones on both sides. People will have to line up to ask questions, and let me start on the left with Ken Bacon.
Thank you very much.
Introduce yourself.
I'm Ken Bacon of Refugees International. Thank you for your clear remarks. I have a question about displacement in and from Iraq. There are hundreds of thousands of refugees have left, and they're leaving at an increasing rate, and there's a lot of displacement inside Iraq. I want to ask about the people who have left their homes inside Iraq and moved somewhere else in the country for safety. Does the Iraqi government have a program to help these people? Is the U.S. doing anything to help these people? And what would you like the U.N. to be doing to help these people? So the question is assistance for the internally displaced. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. I think you raised a very important question, in fact, timing, which is becoming a phenomenal time for the present time. It's quite unfortunate, in fact. There is a systematic cleansing, in fact, in various parts of Iraq, but becoming really a phenomena in the capital of Iraq is in Baghdad timing. And then thousands of families being just displaced from their homes to safe shelters, you name it, could be camps, could be just share accommodation with other families. We do have a ministry dedicated for this job. They are doing well, time being a fact, but the size of the dilemma is really exceeding the capacity, and the budget has been allocated so far. United States also were so far quite assistant in this regard. I can't complain against them. But as I said, in fact, the size of the dilemma, the continuous displacement is making things rather difficult, and shortage of all services needed for these families.
Please.
Hi, Maurice Chochet from the Middle East Media Research Institute. It was reported yesterday in the media that one of the requests that you raised with President Bush was to have new elections in Iraq under international supervision. Do you think, if it's true, do you think the outcome of such elections will change the results of the elections based, if we know it from the past, it was based on sectarian, tribal, and militia reasons in the voting, and how such results will change the administration, if we take into consideration when you mentioned that many doctors in the Ministry of Health were terminated because of their sect background and things like that. Thank you.
I'm not sure about the information, this piece of information that has been divulged from my meeting with the President. I can confirm that, first of all. What I have discussed with Mr. President is, are we concentrating on Plan A, which represents the current political process? And suppose this political process failed or record a complete failure, what would be the alternative? Are we thinking seriously about Plan B? And if so, what sort of parameters that we have to put for Plan B? We should sit down, in fact, and agree upon about the all about this plan. This is what I have said to the President, and he welcomed my views, and I think seriously they are thinking, the American administration, thinking about the alternatives, because they already touched the failure and the loopholes of the current political process. I might elaborate more on this subject, because this is one of the key issues which hindering, in fact, the improvement of the current situation in Iraq. From the beginning, after the collapse of Saddam Hussein, the Americans came to Iraq with a basic knowledge they consider as a postulate, as an information which is non-negotiable. One, and I'm sorry to talk something specific. I don't like, in fact, to talk on Sunni and Shia. I am a vice president of Republic of Iraq, representing Shia before Sunni, and representing Kurdish before Arabs, and representing Turkoman before Arab, although I am proud to be Arab and Sunni. But before that, and above all, I am Iraqi, and respect all sectors and all regions. And I think the dilemma of Iraq has only one key: to go outside the sectarian and division of Iraq. This new phenomena is a brand new problem that we haven't in the past. Over decades and centuries, Shia and Sunni being brothers and lived together in this country, and there was a real coexistence between the Shia and Sunni. What happened after April 2003? The American coming to my country and saying Saddam Hussein was exclusively a Sunni regime, which is false. 35 of 55 members wanted by the Americans, the leaders of Ba'ath, 35 out of 55 are Shia. They are not Sunni. So the majority are Shia. The armed forces, the 90% of the subordinates and the low rank officers are Shia. Yes, and many of the high ranking officers used to be Shia. So one of the things saying that Saddam Hussein regime was Sunni. Second, Shia were out of power since 1400 years, and they should get a power. They are like us. They live with us. They share responsibilities, commerce, government. There is no such divisions between the Shia and Sunni in terms of power. The third postulate is because of the Saddam Hussein mischiefs against the Shia, then the Shia should be compensated on the account of the Sunni. And the Iraqi people were quite surprised about these postulates. They consider them postulates. From that time, started the sectarian quota in the government. And first of all, in the governing council, the Kurdish should get this number of seats, the Sunni get this number of seats, and the Shia should get this number of seats. And the whole political process thereafter, based on this quota. This is the grave mistake that has been committed. And the consequences now, the result of the political process, is the present chaos now, and the dilemma in Iraq time being. The only solution is to go for a cross-sectarian. Definitely, I'll be very interested, in fact, to revise the whole political process. And I'm not hesitant to say we should go square one and revise the whole political process, try to refine whatever problem there, whether the loopholes to fill, in order, in fact, to have a complete and intact and agreed upon and brand new political process. This is the only way, which could cover everything. Cover the constitution, the disputable, controversial constitution time being, the dispute about forming the government, dispute about the security forces, dispute about the sectarian dimension in all government sectors, everything. What happened time being, in fact, is a result of imperfect political process.
Let me press you, Mr. Vice President, about this question of Plan B. There are a lot of rumors about possible political realignments and a possible new majority in Iraq. Is that something you're seeking? Is that something you want? And what would it look like?
This is one of the subjects which I really surprised with when I meet with Mr. President and other administration key staff. I just saw everybody, in fact, more or less convinced that for the present time, the only solution we have is to have this sort of coalition between the moderate political entities. Specifically, talking about Iraqi Islamic Party, which I am the Secretary General of, Iskri, Al-Da'wa, and the two Kurdish parties. We do have no objection, no reservation whatsoever. We will go for that and will support. But believe it or not, this is only going to cover just part of the dilemma. What we need is a comprehensive, brand new strategy to cover everything. This is going to resolve the political process. This is going to resolve, for instance, the balance in the ministries and the government department. But what about security, for instance? What about constitution? There are still other issues, in fact, that has to be addressed. I don't want to see my country, in fact, is just arrested by imperfect political process. Let us think seriously about another avenues, another visions, how to overcome all these problems, in fact. What we need actually is a grave, a strong strategy to tackle all these problems. I'll go for this coalition, but believe it or not, this is not going to put an end for the Iraqi or the American dilemma.
Please.
Yes, thank you. Omar Sheikh Mus, Chief of the Kurdish Service of Voice of America. Thank you, Mr. Vice President, for your specific points and finding a way out for the problems of Iraq. Daniel took actually one of my questions, so I'm not going to repeat it, because we have reports, direct reports from Iraq, that the negotiations are going on for establishing a national front government that would exclude the Sadris, as a matter of fact. But my question now is the following, and you have mentioned it yourself, Your Excellency, and that is many Iraqi leaders are saying, and even some in the Bush administration as well, that in the final analysis, the solution is in the hand of the Iraqis. And I would like to know what vision you have. You talked about a general strategy that would solve most of the problems of Iraq. I would like to hear this vision, I mean this strategy that would solve the problems of Iraq, and how long would it take? We have waited 3.5 years for the Iraqis to find ways out, and unfortunately they haven't been able to do that. And would you be able to do that without the help of the United States and the international community?
No, definitely, in fact. I will start from the last question that you made. The size and nature of the dilemma, in fact, is really exceeding the capacity of the Iraqis. Will be in much need for the international communities, in fact, to help us, especially our friends in the state and Britain and other countries, in fact. This is one. Second, as I told you, in fact, it's not easy, in fact, to reply your question. What I have said is to start from the beginning to cover all what and to revise what happened after the collapse of the previous regime, start from scratch, try to revise the basics on which the political process has been built up. And afterwards, in fact, you will automatically resolve the outcome of a political process, which we do have, in fact, a major question mark on it. So it's a long way to go, but we should have enough courage, in fact, to go and be frank with us, between us as Iraqis, between us Iraqis and the Americans, that look, from the beginning, we made a grave mistake. We have to tackle these grave mistakes before we tackle the phenomena, the conclusion, the consequences of this political process. This is my approach to resolve the problem.
Please.
If you allow me, Daniel, can you ask me in Arabic?
Sure, but introduce yourself first and then you'll have to translate.
Dr. Tayyip Badri. سؤالي الحمد لله على السلامة. شكرا على المحاضرة.
الله يحفظك. شكرا جزيلا.
من نقطتين.
تفضل.
النقطة الأولى الجيش العراقي.
نعم.
الجيش العراقي كما هو معروف على مبدأ المحاصصة اللي صارت بالتوزيع السياسي أنه من حصة العرب السنة.
القديم ولا الجديد؟
الجديد. جبهة التوافق.
أها. يعني الوزير. وزير.
الوزير العبيدي.
نعم. نعم.
الوزير العبيدي كان مرشح جبهة التوافق.
صحيح.
زين. الجيش وزير الدفاع العبيدي يعني تحت امرته تقريبا 300 الف جندي عراقي، هذا هو كما هو معروف يعني في امريكا، ما اعرف كم عددهم الان.
نعم.
300 او 100 ما اعرف، او 110.
نعم.
زين، الوزير العبيدي اللي هو يمثل العرب السنة.
نعم.
لا يدافع عن السنة.
نعم.
يعني انتم رشحتوا وزير على اساس انه يحفظ الامن على الاقل المناطق السنية، لان المناطق السنية ما عندهم مثلا ميليشيات تحمل باجات وتحمل اسلحه مرخصه من الدوله.
نعم.
زين، ويتعرضون للهجوم ويتعرضون للقتل حتى امام الجيش العراقي، يعني حتى سعدون الدليمي، ايام سعدون الدليمي كان الجيش العراقي يتدخل. الان مرشحكم ما يتدخل عندما يقتل السنه لا يتمثلهم.
اوكي، ناو يو جوت تو دو ات بريفلي ان
انجلش. وان مور كويشن. النقطه الثانيه.
نعم.
مبدا المصالحه.
المصالح الوطنية.
المصالح الوطنية.
نعم.
زين، المصالح الوطنية بعد أنا أعتقد أنه أكو اتفاق بينكم وبين الائتلاف وبين الأكراد أنه خلي القتل اليومي مثلا 20-50 مواطن عراقي، ودليل على ذلك أنه من توصل 200 تطلع أنت حضرة جنابك وجلال الطلباني والحكيم أنه وقف القتال.
نعم.
وأنه ندعي المصالحة. تتصالح مع من؟ العرب السنة هم يقاتلون، وأنت تمثل وأنت جزء من هذا التيار اللي هو متمثل هيئة أعمال المسلمين.
نعم.
فأنت عندما تقف مع الحكيم ومع الجلال الطالباني وتدعو إلى المصالحة، أنت أوردي مصالح وياهم.
نعم.
تدخل وياهم بالعملية السياسية. Yeah.
I've got to stop you there and I need you to repeat briefly.
I didn't prepare for English.
No. That was Mr. Vice President. You want to repeat the questions in English and answer them.
Okay. The first question wasn't a question, in fact, it's only a comment from his side, from the gentleman, saying that Minister of Defense is a Sunni, he belongs to Al Tawafiq Front. Actually, he's not. The minister is independent, he's not belong to any political front or party. Why he don't defend the Sunnis when the militias attack them? It is a matter of routine, and this is just part of the constitutional problem. The Minister of Defense has no power because the Prime Minister is chief in command. Like here and the state here, the president is the chief in command, in fact. So the same thing, in fact. So it depends on the behavior, on the policy. Regardless whoever might be in the seat of MOD or MOI, still you have the prime minister on the upper hand. He could issue whatever instruction or guidance or orders to both of them. The second, he was talking about reconciliation project. This is one of the problems that facing Iraq is time being. It's really a stumbling block. Everybody, in fact, expecting that this project is going to be helpful to reconcile the Iraqis who been splitted, divided, as how to tackle the current situation, and in particular, to have foreign troops on your territory. Some of the Iraqis went for peaceful resistance. That is, in particular, the Iraqi Islamic Party, and others went for armed resistance. You call them insurgents, we call them national resistance. Their ultimate goal, their bottom line, is just to see Iraq is free. No foreign troops on their territory. That's it. They don't have ideological agenda, for instance. This is why we shouldn't call them terrorism. They are not terrorists. They are fighting time being, in fact, to free the country. And they are prepared, in fact, to be sometime partner in the political process. They are open-minded. They are cooperative. Really cooperative during the election time. We pass a message through the media that we want them, in fact, to immune and secure the lives of the people to vote and come back safely to their homes. They have done it. They have influence in certain areas in Iraq. So they are actually in the political process. All what we need, in fact, is a genuine project that could be shared and written by America to say openly whether their troops are going to be on the Iraqi territories forever or for a temporary period. This is very important. I understand the sensitiveness of this issue when the American administration is saying that we are not prepared, in fact, to declare this project because we are afraid we might send the wrong message to terrorists. We don't want to see Americans being humiliated because of the national resistance of Iraq. This will have its own grave consequences in the international relationship. We know that. I acknowledge that. So I just modified this theme, saying timetable conditional withdrawal. The condition is a commitment of the Americans to restructure, to refine, to retrain, supply arms, equipment to the newborn Iraqi army. As long as you go for this plan, and the day that you finish this program, and you have a reliable national forces, which could replace and take care about the security vacuum, there will be no need for the foreign troops. So that's it. You've done your job. You were in Iraq, in fact, to secure, to look after security. But the time, the date, Iraqi forces could be prepared to do that, there will be no need for somebody else, in fact, to share responsibilities or to share the burden of securities. The burden of securities is lives, is money. We don't want to, in fact, to spend more blood and more money in Iraq, in fact. We will do that, and we will challenge all the security challenges that we have and the pressure that we are facing time being. So the reconciliation is quite unfortunate. Issued wrongly, with many loopholes, a mistake, deficiency. There was no mechanism. There was no secretary committee to revise and to update. There is no time scale for that. So from the beginning, there was a deficiency and grave loopholes there. This is why we had not so far achieved any significant success of this project. Although everybody inside Iraq and outside Iraq betting on this plan, in fact, that it will be the key issue that has to be addressed thoroughly, systematically, to put an end for this division between the Shia and Sunni, between the insurgents and whoever opted to be partner in the political process. This is the problem that we are facing time being. Unless there is a genuine reform to this project, again, the Iraqis will continue to be divided.
Please.
Tom Bridle from the National Democratic Institute. My question is about the parliament, but NDI has been working in Iraq since 2003 with IIP, with Tawafiq. It's been a pleasure to work with you, work with many of the people on the delegation. My question is about the role of the parliament and what positive role the parliament can and should play in the process of reconciliation, in the process of building a more stable political state, a more stable government, and also what kind of assistance the United States and other international bodies can provide to help strengthen the parliament, make it a more effective and constructive institution.
First of all, I would like to express my thanks, in fact, for your for the NDI contribution in Iraq. It's really remarkable, and to be impartial and neutral, I also would like to extend my thanks to IRI as well.
I'm sure if they were here, they would be happy to be thanked as well.
So both, in fact, contributing and promoting democracy in Iraq, I am very glad to see both of them, in fact, very active now and in the future as well, in fact. I would like, in fact, to have more courage to stay with us until we fulfill the job, as Mr. President say. We are not stay the course. We will have another course now, but please stay with us. We need you. Okay? This is a great question that you have tabled. In fact, we have another problem, in fact, about the parliament, in fact. The administration of the parliament is the sectarian tension. Penetration in the parliament is making things very, very difficult time being. Take one example, in fact. Everybody under the impression that the constitution written in a way which become, unfortunately, a stumbling block in front of hindering the political process. Regardless, I can't see a systematic, a genuine effort done in this direction so far. We need a great reform in this regard, and this is why I'm asking you to stay with us, to shake hands with us, and to render the support that we use, in fact, to get from you and from IRI. Thank you very much.
Let me press you a little bit about that, Mr. Vice President. What specific reforms would you like in the Constitution, and how do you plan to get the kind of majority that you need to pass them?
First of all, in fact, many articles, in fact, needed to be revised. The ultimate goal of revision, of amendment of Constitution, in fact, to get this national chart to be in compliance with the common national interest of Iraq. And believe it or not, during that period, which is about 4 or 5 months, in fact, the constitution written quickly and during an imbalanced political imbalance stage. We were not in the government. We were not in the interim parliament. Other sectors were there, very active, and they are assigned the job to write the constitution. We've been invited lately, and whoever assigned the job to write the constitution, saying that we have this draft, we agreed upon, it's up to you, in fact, to sign it or not, in the matter of take it or leave it. This is the way of writing a constitution for a country which depends on democracy and human rights, and all Iraqis to share responsibilities. We couldn't do anything about that. Few days before the referendum, being requested to have an urgent meeting with the key political leaders, they said, we are afraid about the referendum may come up with negative result, and we would like to seek your views how to get out of this problem. I was very clear. I told them that we do have strong reservation for various issues, for various key issues. They said, okay, we don't have enough time. What about if we add an article to make amendment practical, workable, in short period? I say I have no objection for that. On the assumption that the political leaders are going to sign inclusion of this article which allow amendment due course in short notice, if they sign and committed, I have no objection. The reply I received, yes, they are committed, they are prepared to sign the amendment, and they are obliged to go forward due course to shake hand with you and to be cooperative and to make the suitable changes. On such commitment, on such obligations, I put my signature, myself, and accept the draft and I educate my people to vote yes for the constitution. I also imagine the problem in the state as well, because if the referendum came with a no result, this will collapse the whole political process. I know how dangerous consequences will be, not only in Iraq, but in the state as well. So I study these two elements, in fact, carefully, and decided to have this hard decision and endorse the draft on the assumption that there will be a genuine opportunities to revise. Now, I'm quite hesitant to confirm my colleagues' attitude, whether they are committed to their obligations or they just forget about that we put our signature and that's it at that time. And if we want for amendment, this will be only a superficial amendment to the Constitution, not a genuine one. This is not the case. Now, nobody else, nobody of reliable, well-known oil company has the courage, according to the Constitution, to come to Iraq for investment, because there is a clear-cut contradiction in the authorities between the regions and the central government. There is a contradiction between how to divide the return of selling crude oil. What is the part of the government? What is the portion of the region? Who should decide? Who should sign for the contracts? There is a major loopholes now in the Constitution, plus the identity of the country, left in vague, plus the federalism, the authorities given to the regions, plus three types of army each region could enjoy, without no reference to the central government. We do have three types of region. Each region enjoy to have three types of army. What is going to happen in Iraq if tomorrow we apply federalism? Three types of army? Each region has three types? With no reference whatsoever army. It's only one army in the center and three armies in the regions. With these problems, we do have problems being between provinces about the boundaries, about the national resources, about authorities. Now there is also a major dispute between the central government and the provinces and the provincial councils about the authorities. Who should assign the leader of the police? Who should ask him to resign? Who should do this and that? Many, 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 many loopholes in the Constitution. We have to go for it. Not for the I'm not talking about the national interest of Iraq only, but for the international community as well. Because Iraq is not like any other country in Africa. Iraq is Iraq. It's the second largest reservoir of crude oil. So it is not only the interest of the Iraqis, the interest of the international community as well, that things in Iraq should be in order. And the basic things is to have a compact, a modern, and well-written, agreed-upon constitution. This is what we need. And really, we ask your help for that.
Stanley Kober with the Cato Institute. In an effort to avert our own civil war, Abraham Lincoln made an appeal to the mystic chords of memory. Didn't work. It did not work. What are the mystic chords of memory that would bind Iraqis together?
So, could you repeat your question? I couldn't get that. Just raise your voice. Okay. Don't talk like Bram Lincoln, please.
Okay. In an effort to avert, prevent our own civil war,
yes,
Abraham Lincoln made an appeal,
yes,
to the mystic chords of memory.
To domestic chords?
No, mystic, M-Y-S-T-I-C, yes. Something emotional.
Uh-huh.
What are the mystic chords of memory that would bind Iraqis together?
We do have, I think, there will be no chance for civil war, my friends. Don't worry about the massacre, the number of deaths. Yes, Iraq is in real tragedy, but it's not, it's already slide into a civil war, or it's going to slide into a civil war. This will never happen unless the wife has enough courage to fight her husband in the inside their rooms, inside their house, because in Iraq it's quiet normally to have one family divided with a Shia and Sunni. Could be the husband Sunni and the wife Shia, and it's up to the children in fact to be Shia or Sunni. It's no problem. For the tribes, they are also divided, part of them Sunni, part of them Shia. And they are very coherent time being. So there is no way for civil war. What we see time being, in fact, is a tragedy of sectarian tension. And this could be overcome. And this, believe it or not, is a brand new phenomenon to the Iraqi society. I told you from the beginning that we haven't got this problem in the past. We used to live in brotherly hood way, in real coexistence, and we are prepared, in fact, to continue. The foreign interference in the Iraqi internal issues make this breakup between the Shia and Sunni and try to fuel these differences. Time comes in future that the bridge is going to be done between these two sectors. And we are trying our best time being. And believe it or not, the people who have been so far sacrificed for this sectarian tension are the innocent people, whom they are not part of the dispute. They don't have even sectarian attitude or behavior. And this is the problem. There is a chance to bridge between the Shia and Sunni.
Please, Sam. Sam Parker, USIP. I have a question about federalism. And your party, a couple months ago, spearheaded an effort to block passage of the federalism law, successfully negotiated an 18-month delay. And it was an Iraqi effort, cross-sectarian, secularist, Islamist, all across the board. Very, very impressive. And but now, I kind of wonder, this new alliance that you're talking about, the Kurdish parties and Skiri, Dawa, that alliance would tend to, those are pro-federalist, pro-regionalist, pro-breakup of Iraq, if you will. And I wonder, and more than that, they're outsiders. They weren't under Saddam, they're opposition parties. And the IAP seems really out of place in that group, and much more on the side of the other parties in Tawafiq. Even there's some common ground there with Sadrists in the sense of nationalists, Motlak, of course. So I'm just having a really hard time understanding why the IAP would join such an alliance. And does that mean that you see federalism as at all viable in the future, or like maybe a three-province Sunni Arab region? I mean, it doesn't seem like something you would advocate, but that's my question.
No, the federalism is unrelated, in fact, to the current dialogue between us and others. What we try, in fact, to achieve is to mitigate the tension situation. We try, in fact, first of all, in fact, to normalize the situation, especially in Baghdad, in fact, and to stop the sectarian killing. That's what we are aiming for, in fact. If we achieve that, we are working more or less on priority basis. We do have, first of all, in fact, as I saw Mr. President shocked, and he frankly telling me that he can't understand, in fact, the killing between Iraqis, in fact, and to the degree that is making everybody, in fact, shocked what's happened to the Iraqis. So I do have, as a man in the government, I do have a responsibility, in fact, to render whatever services and to accept any sort of compromises to stop the bloodshed of my people, Shia and Sunni. Other issues could be kept pending for the time being, in fact, but we are not forget about that. It is a major dispute between us and others. But it doesn't mean, in fact, for the temporary period, in fact, we should have, in fact, to move to tackle one of the most striking and dangerous situation, which is the killing now on the identity of the people.
Sounds like real politics to me.
Sorry?
Sounds like real politics
well,
to me.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Ken Joseph with the Assyrian Christian Institute. It's very refreshing to hear you.
Thank you.
We could use some more of your thoughts here in Washington. Speaking on behalf of the Assyrian Christians, as you know, the indigenous people of Iraq, and unfortunately there was no mention of the Assyrians in the Baker Report or in any of the discussions here, and we'd just like to hear some encouragement from you that, in fact, the Assyrian Christians as well as the non-Muslim in Iraq have a future, and the 500,000 that have left should, in fact, come back. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I was really one of the significant outcome and recommendation given by this report, in fact, is to tackle the Syrian issues in different way than Iranian issues, in fact. Syrian. Ashurin. Rest assured about that, my friend. Yeah. Sleep on silk, no problem. The temporary problems, time being, in fact, there is no threats, in fact, for the other sectors, other regions. We don't have this bias against Christians and other ethnic groups. Problem, time being, in fact, the security, in fact, chaos, hurting everybody. It's not only the Assyrians or the Christians, Muslim, first of all, in fact, because the Sunni and Shia, they are killing each other, time being, in fact. So they are shouldering, in fact, the major portion of the current chaos situation. But please rest assured, in fact, there is no temptation, there is no intention from anybody, neither from the government nor from the Iraqi people. I could talk on behalf of all Iraqis, in fact, that there will be, in fact, a great future for the ethnic groups, in fact, and there is no abuse in our attitude, and we consider, as I told you, in fact, the basic things is that we should return back, in fact, to the common interest, that everybody should see a seat for it in the new Iraq, irrespect to being this sector or that sector, this religion or that religion. This is the only way. We shouldn't, in fact, differentiate between people among their roots, affiliation, or faith. Iraq is the identity, and everybody should see himself, in fact, equal to his brothers, irrespective, as I said, in fact, to religion, ethnic, and this. This is, at least, this is the Iraqi Islamic Party views about how to remove these problems that we are facing time being and to get rid of the sectarian violence.
Mr. Vice President, let me conclude by asking you the question that you started to answer. What about Syria and Iran? Is it a good idea for the idea the Iraq Study Group put forward was the idea of a multilateral initiative that would include Syria and Iran in the effort to stabilize Iraq?
Well, in principle, in fact, I have no objection, I have no reservation, in fact, for any country, in fact, to talk to another country on their bilateral issues, not on the issues of the third party. We don't like, in fact, that, for instance, Americans talk to Iranians about the Iraqi issues. They should talk. They have enough problems, in fact, to talk about. They have. So I don't want, in fact, to exhaust their money and efforts and time, in fact, to talk about Iraqis. We are prepared, in fact, to shoulder responsibilities. All what we need from the Americans, in fact, to back up, to give us, in fact, a chance to prove ourselves that we are actually leaders of this new Iraq, in fact, and we could shoulder political responsibilities as required, and to ensure the national interests of Iraq. None of the Iraqis, in fact, would like to see Americans sit down with the Iranians next day. They are talking about an agenda exclusive to Iraq. This is, we don't like it. As I told you, in fact, we will be responsible. We are ready, in fact, to shoulder that. But we need your support. We need your backup.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President.